Okay, so B'siyata D'Shmaya, we're going to begin our, I believe it's our fifth shiur in the Sichas Ran series. Be'ezer Hashem, thank you so much for coming. And tonight, with the limited time period that we have, to be able to delve into these teachings together, and as always, I appreciate each and every one of you for coming, thank you so much. We have a lot to do. We have a lot to do, and not really in terms of quantity, but in terms of the depth and in terms of the birur of the sugyas that we're going to try to tackle tonight, both in the inyan of money and how to understand Rabbi Nachman of Breslov's approach to the effect of wealth on Avodas Hashem, both latav and lemutav, both for the positive and the opposite. We're also going to delve into Be'ezer Hashem. In the second part of the shiur, we're going to be delving into the essence of Rabbi Nachman's war and battle on philosophy. So it's a very, very famous element of the Breslover approach to Avodas Hashem, which goes hand in hand with the concept of tmimus, simplicity, pshitus. Also, to go in a simple way. We talked about this in previous year also, but we're going to get really, really deep into and learn certain of Rabbi Nachman's Lashonos, both about the Rambam and about others, and to try to navigate that sugya and to understand what's the chilik, what's the difference in approach, and why did Rabbi Nachman care so much about it, why is it so important, and what was he trying to convey, and how does it join together with all of the other elements that we've talked about until now, and that we'll continue to talk about Be'ezer Hashem for the foreseeable future, to create the Breslover consciousness and that path that Rabbi Nachman wanted to take us by the hand and guide us along. Okay, so let's first delve into Sichas Ran Dalid. Let's read through the Sicha one time very quickly. We already read it last time. And let's try to dive into this sugya first, and then we're going to hit the beginning of Sichas Ran Hey, which, like I mentioned last time, is very long. Just going to learn it in Chalakim. So I did 5.1, even though it's a very long piece. But each week we're going to tackle a different element of it. It's all one sugya, but with a lot of different, you know, seifim. Okay, so Sichas Ran Dalid says the Heilige Rebbe is close to Yagin Leinu. Ach Shavit Malalo. Now, in our times, Kasher Ma'od Ma'od Chiyam Ma'od Leish Kasher. Very, very hard. Very, very difficult. For a really, truly kosher person, a good, fitting, upright person, to amass wealth. Because a person is going to need to experience a tremendous descent until he manages to go ahead and to attain wealth. And even after that process of having a spiritual descent, even so, even a person who goes through this process that has tremendously detrimental effects on his Avodas Hashem, it's not so clear that he's going to actually emerge successful in attaining this wealth. Ki gamar Hashem, because even wicked people, the Kali Olam, and people that are just floating around in this world, lav kol echad masig mois, not everybody attains this. Aval ish kasher ve'emes, but a really, truly honest and fitting and holy person, rachak ma'od shi'ili ashiris, it's very, very distant from him that he should be able to attain wealth. Kida, because a person should know. Because from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and we talked about how the Beis HaMikdash was the center of wealth, everything was gold, everything was silver, it was made out of beautiful, beautiful and very, very expensive materials. When that Beis HaMikdash was destroyed along with everything that it represented, the Pasuk says, "Babachinas vatered plaim." There was a Bechina, or the Beis HaMikdash, and Am Yisrael, and that whole concept of the Beis HaMikdash represented in terms of wealth was vatered plaim. It had a wondrous and awesome, a frightening and terrifying fall. Plaim, says the Eligar Rebbe, plaim is oisios alofim. Plaim, which means an awesome, wondrous descent, is also letters, alafim, haynu shaha, alafim shal ashiris. These thousands, which is a reference to ashiris, to wealth, yar ad plaim, at a tremendous descent, fell down very, very deeply. Dahaini, you read the gedolim, nefila, gamkein, behechir, shi'ilai, chas v'shalim, you read the gedolim, ahoy, kaitim shabala ashiris, because since that's where the wealth is, that it had such a tremendous fall, plaim, atayrid plaim, and that's where the alafim are, that it fell down into the klipas, right, into that place of the evil forces, or the negative forces that are trying to hold us back from serving Hashem. So therefore, in order to attain that wealth, a person's got to go down to that place, right? And he's going to have to experience that vaterid ployim, that Allah fimizumanim, vadayin usafik kanal, and even then, it's not even certain that he's going to make it, right? Avalish kasher be'emes, kasher lema'oy, chili ashir, is very, very difficult for a truly kasher person to attain ashiris, va'afal pish, and imtsam gam tzadikim, anashim ksherim, sheyesh lemois, even though you do find that the word tzadikim that did manage to hold on to some of that wealth in their pursuit of Avodas Hashem, it would have been better for them not to have had it, because even so, it's very, very hard, and it's difficult, and it detracts instead of aiding. And those tzaddikim that do have wealth, at the end of the day, it takes away, in some aspect, it damages their service. And he says, even, and he says, the truth is, afal pi sheish lam eizim ata shiris, afal pi kein, ein lam ashiris galdam azuman, kamoy sheish la kali oilam sheish lam alafim, even those tzaddikim that do have something, but it's not the kind of wealth that we're talking about. Those people that devote all their lives to it, right? And even then, they have to have some schus, min ha-shamayim, a mazel, to be able to get there. But he says, it's going to damage them, and they don't have this wealth, right? That the kali oilam have, sheish lam alafim, or rabava is hadumim, azumanim, liquid cash, ki ashav kashav, kavim, this that Rav Nachman Hardenker said, which means that those that are holding on to the Yamin, which is a bechina of Lishma, they're zocha to Orech Yamin. Those that are learning Torah Shalom Lishma are zocha to Oishir v'chavid, frak the Gemara. I don't understand. Those that are learning Shaloi Lishma, Azorcha to Oishir v'chavid, and those on the right are only Zorcha to Oirich Yamim, to Arichas Yamim. What happened to their Oishir v'chavid? Says the Gemara, no, Kol Shekein. Of course, right? V'amr Abisein Zuchan of the Bracha, Oirich Yamim Ika, Oishir v'chavid Leka. V'amr Kol Shekein Oishir v'chavid. Certainly they have Oishir v'chavid. V'amr Ibn Achman Zuchan of the Bracha, again, in this sort of sardonic or sarcastic way, Shura Kol Shekein. Right, that the Gemara learns it out from a Kol Shekein, but at the end of the day, it's not Mefurish in the Pasuk that those on the right are going to have wealth, and therefore those that do have wealth, okay, the Gemara already said Kol Shekein, but at the end of the day, it's not Mefurish in the Pasuk, and therefore we do not find that by and large those tzaddikim that devoted themselves to Avodas Hashem Be'emes were zocheh to a phenomenal amount of liquid cash of wealth that we described. Okay, Haynu Shabavada, right? So he says Shabavada Yukav Chaymer the Kol Shekein Shiro Yishiyu Le'em Ashir. Certainly they deserve it. They do not have that kind of liquid cash that we talked about. So we already started to talk last time about how it's a little bit difficult and challenging to navigate this sugya, because in Breslov, you find a lot of times that what we have sources in one place, we have sometimes sources in another place that don't necessarily contradict, but are deepening that sugya and bringing another element and another facet and another aspect. And so let's dive into Likut Imran Torah Samach, just the beginning of this Torah that's very, very lengthy and has many, many steps and stages, and it's a very, very complex process. So let's try to jump in just to the first couple of paragraphs in Likut Imran Torah Samach. B'siyata d'shmaya, with the help of the Master of the World. Dav, says the Heilige Rebbe, no. She is shvili ha-toyra, she is v'emes boininus gavol ma'oid. There's a certain path, there are paths in the Torah that require a tremendous amount of contemplation. She e'efshir lover l'his boininus ha-zois. And it's impossible to attain this level of his boininus, of contemplation, of depth in thinking. Ki'im al yidei ashiris. The only way to get there is if a person has ashiras. Kimai shebipshati araisa, says the Eliger Rebbe, just like in terms of nigla of Torah, Chazal say in a very simple level in Avos, im ein kemach, ein Torah, right? If there's no kemach, if there's no parnasa, if there's no support, then there's no Torah. Vitzarech liyos, layal kolpanim, parnasa. And when it comes to the nigla of Torah, a person at least, more sheets are coming, yeah, right? A person at least has to have some parnasa, al kolpanim. So in the same way that for the nigla of Torah, im ein kemach in Torah, and that's on a simple level, kamoikin lizboinunas hazayis, when we start talking about this kind of depth, of this kind of contemplation, shu gadol ma'oid, which is tremendously great, tzarech she'ilay, ashiras gadol ma'oid, right? It's not just im ein kemach in Torah. For this kind of Torah, you just don't just say kemach is not going to cut it, right? You need mamish. Ashira's gadol ma'ayd, a tremendous amount of wealth. She alay hain rav, that a person, again, should have a tremendous, tremendous treasure house. V'lay tachzar kol ba, and that nothing should be lacking. Kitzar kol hain da alma, all of the wealth of the world. L'zboinenes azayz. In order to attain this, is boinenes. U'b'nei yisaskar, and he says, the shevet of Yisachar, shahay lahem zois hasboinunus, that they attained this hasboinunus. Bebechinas, ube b'nei Yisachar yoide bina, the Pasuk says, that the descendants of Yisachar, that shevet, yoide bina, they were contemplating the Torah, or they attained this very deep level of wisdom and understanding. How did they get to this level of Yoidei Bina? And the answer is because they were the Shevet that was blessed with wealth. They were the ones to go ahead and to be symbolized by donkeys that were laden with all sorts of wonderful riches and wealth. And the Targum Unkla says, after Benichsen, they were very wealthy and in property and real estate. And therefore, we find that it was Dafka B'nai Yisachar that was connected to the Bechinam Chamar Garim, that they had this wealth. Therefore, B'nai Yisachar is Yoidei Bina, that they accessed this level of Bina. V'Alkein, the Rebbe continues, that's why we find that Moshe Rabbeinu, V'chol Hanavim, all of the prophets, Ho'ilehem Ashiras Gadol Ma'oid, we find that these Sadiqim did, in fact, have a tremendous amount of wealth. K'dei Lavi Al Yadai L'Zboinenes Hazoi, so that they can access, on a spiritual level, we started talking last week a little bit, that money at its core comes from the Shorash Nishmas Yisrael, from a very, very lofty place. A very lofty place. Bechlal, it's very interesting. A lot of the anti-Semitic tropes over throughout history have a deep, deep mashma'os of emes in Pnimius. Interesting thing. Jews historically have big noses. It's a big, big depth to that. Rav Gamliel in the Gemara is called the one with the big nose. Anybody who learned Torah Beis with us, I'm the Chavra, Torah Beis, have a big nose, what that is. That's Mashiach. Mashiach is the Ruach, is the Reach, right? Morach V'Dayim, what that is, we talked about. Nukva de Pradaska, very lofty level. The Messianic spirit is connected to the concept of the nose, of the Chaitim. And Jews have big noses, Baruch Hashem, right? Because that means that Beruchnius were mushrish in that place, right? Jews are always wealthy. All Jews are wealthy. Of course they're shtuyot. It's not true. It wasn't true historically. The Jews were always wealthy, right? We need a scapegoat, and so we blame those wealthy Jews that are always in charge of anything because we're very bright. Not, you know, generally speaking, Jews are bright. Jews are educated. They were always much more educated, right, than other segments of society, wherever we were, the people of the book. And therefore, naturally, they figured things out, right? B'nei Yaakov. Yaakov itself means, right, to trick. And so Jews always knew how to work the system to their advantage. And so we find there are certain aspects of these tropes, right, of these anti-Semitic charges or ideas that really in truth are rooted very, very deeply in emes in a certain way, right? And when it comes out in a klipa, so then they don't know how to handle it and they take it to a negative extreme. But this is true, right, that Jews are connected to wealth. Jews are connected to money, b'shorish, but the shorish of money, kesef and zav, is chesed and gvura, that combine in tiferes, which is the source for where Am Yisrael come from. Like the Pasuk says, Yisrael, Asher B'cha, Espa'er, Yaakov Avinu, is the blend between Avram is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gevura. Avram is Kesef, Yitzchak is Zav, and that comes together in Yaakov Avinu, that he is the Bechir Sheba Avos, the Av of all of Am Yisrael, the Shvatim that descend from him, and therefore at the root of Am Yisrael's Neshama is this very lofty, it's called Klalis Agvanim, the mixtures of different shining colors. Beruch Nias Mani is a very, very lofty thing. It's a big sugya, Mekach U'memchar, Rav Nasan Lukuti Alachas is Marich, right? The whole chelik hey chelik vav, right? Basically, Likutei Halachos is talking about all of these halachas, right? Chosh Mishpat, it's all these halachas and the depth of them. What money is b'shoresh? And so, here we find that Moshe Rabbeinu and these tzaddikim, in order to be able to attain this very lofty level of hizboinenus in the Torah Kedosha, needs to be in this aspect of Ashiras, to be able to attain this incredible amount of wealth. That's why we find that the Torah itself is called Hain, right? Psukim in Tehillim, David HaMelech describing the Torah, me'alfi zav v'chesef. It's not just a mashal. Ha'toibli Torahs picha me'alfi zav v'chesef. Adrabah, it's possible to say that the way that a person can access the toibli Torahs picha, to be able to access the true toiv in Torah, which is the Bechina V'Zbainanos, is me'alfi zav v'chesef. Not more than, but from alfi zav v'chesef. Alafim, not pla'im, right? The Beis HaMikdash k'tikunai. And David HaMelech Tavka is the one that finds the Beis HaMikdash. Ad she'em samakim, right? The David HaMelech lo etein shnas le'enai. David HaMelech and the Beis HaMikdash are mushers, are bound together at the source. And so toibli tayras pichas dafka what? Me alfi zav v'chesed. When a person is connecting to zav and chesed, is chesed and gevura, and that combine in the tiferes from which Torah emerges with lavin, lois aseiz, and aseiz, chesed and gevura, shamar v'zachar, all of this, this is what the Torah is at the root, right? Is a mixture of these two elements. And that's the most amazing thing.
Ashiras has nothing to do with Keser?
Why do you ask? Why?
I forgot where I saw something.
It's possible on some level. In Kisvei Breslov, it's associated with Tiferes. Klal Yisak Vanim. Chesed and Gevura. But everything is rooted ultimately in Keser. Keser is the beginning of everything. Keser is the first stage that encompasses everything, right? Magen Mireshis Acharis is Keser. Everything is folded up into that first stage of will, of desire. V'chein, says Rabbi Nachman, kol mi sha'avar derech yadam atayra. Amazing thing. Anybody who the Torah, in terms of the tradition, in developing stages, passed through their hands, ha'ilah ha'mashir is gadamai. Had tremendous, tremendous wealth. The Hainu Moshe Rabbeinu, we already talked about. Shehevi Atar Li Yisrael, Chazal tells us how Asher Gadol was a tremendously wealthy person. Kamoisha Amr, Rabbi Sin, Zuchan Adavracha, Misham Nis Asher Moshe, right? Chazal tells us that from the psolas of the Luchas, that a Kaddish Baruch who said to Moshe, you're going to chisel out the Luchas, and from that, the psolas that comes out from that, Evan Sapir was a very, very precious stone. Misham Nis Asher Moshe, that's where Moshe became wealthy from, which is also interesting, right? That Moshe's wealth comes not secondary to the root of the Torah, but the Luchas, that the whole entire Torah is folded into the Luchas, and the whole entire Luchas is folded into an Echesh HaMelekecha, that it was from the Psoilus of the Luchas, right? Which is an amazing thing, it's a deep thing. The letters that were created by chiseling out, meaning what was in the place of the letters of the Torah, of Misham Nis Asher Moshe. You see? So the Torah and the root of Ashiris is Mamish one. It's Mamish one. Because the Psoilus of the Luchas, what is the Psoilus? They carved in the letters all the way through. That means that essentially what was coming out of the Luchas was the letters in wealth form, in a certain way. Right? It was the Torah in wealth form. And Shamnes Ashamosh, an amazing thing. Shehedi Atar Li Yisrael HaYashar Gadol, we said, Kamay Shamar Rabbi Sin Zuchan Adavracha, V'chein Rebbe, and also Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rebbe, Shasidir V'chasam HaMishnayis, who compiled the Mishnayis, also we find was tremendously wealthy, V'chein Rav Ashi. And when it came time for the Gemara, the Ravina Rav Ashi, or Masada, the Gemara, Shei Chasimas HaTalmid, same thing. They also had tremendous wealth, V'sidir Eskala Talmid, Shagam Kain, Hayu Ashirim Gedolim Ma'oy Kamay Sha'am Rabbi Sein Zuchan Adavracha, the Chazal tell us, the Gemara Gittin, and Bab Metzia. Ki machma shetiknu v'sidris kol ha'tarash v'alpeh v'avar derech yodam ha'tayra, and the Torah in its developmental hishtalshalos passed through them. Okay, and hayagam ken ashirim kanal, they had to have not just the imen kemach in Torah is a simple thing, but ashiros, Rabbi Nachman says, kol hayin da amalech sechsar kolba, an amazing, amazing amount of wealth. Because a person needs tremendous wealth in order to attain this level of Hizbayinunus. Now, how do you put these two things together? Read you some of the Lashayinus, just to remind you, if you forgot from 10 minutes ago. Kasha ma'oid, right? Ma'oid ma'oid. Sheyim ma'oid le'ish kasha. And he goes on and on throughout this piece. We heard pla'im. And he's going to have Yirid Gedoyle ma'oid kaidim shabala ashiris. And Allah famizumana vadainu safik. Mazik lem labidasam. How does a person put these things together? How are we able to reconcile these two teachings? On the most basic level, and I think there's a level of an element of truth to this, perhaps the truth, I don't know. This piece that we just learned from Torah Samach is perhaps 10% of a very, very long lesson. It goes on for pages. One of the longest lessons is Torah Samach. It's for pages and pages and pages. In the continuation of this introductory concept that a person needs wealth in order to have his bonus, Rabbi Nachman then goes on to say, well, how do you attain this wealth in order to attain this bonus? That's how Rabbi Nachman always works. He says, the first thing is that there's an enormous bonus. So how do you get that? Through wealth. How do you get wealth? And then he goes on and continues. Sipur Maisius is part of that, Shloisha Kaviyira, many, many different bechinas of spiritual madrigas that a person needs to work on, that this leads to that, and that leads to this, and this leads to the other thing, until finally you come back to his bonus. So it's possible to suggest, and this is what one of the Breslov Rav Shvin told me when I spoke to him about this 2 weeks ago, is that Sichas Randalid is talking about a tzaddik, an ish kasher be'emes, who's trying to attain wealth, but not al derech tarasam. And so Mamela, it's possible for him to attain wealth, but it's not going to lead to the kind of zbonin. It's not going to lead to the kind of wealth that's going to give him the ability or to access the enormous level of zbonin as that we're talking about, and ultimately it's going to be mazakim. But if a person is to work the tikkunei atik, all the different levels, Be'ez Hashem, we'll all learn it together, Siyata Deshmaya Tara Samach at one point, all of those levels and tikkunim, so then for such a person, not only is it not mazik, but to such a person, it will bring to a very high level of hizbonenus. That's one approach. But I want to explore a second approach that's founded in another Torah in the Likutei Moran, which is brought in source number 2, Likutei Moran Kuf Samach Beis, 162. Let's learn this Torah together. To my knowledge, it's perhaps, I don't know if it's the only I mean, there are anecdotal accounts that are brought in certain places in the Kutumran, but a story like this about somebody else, Lanias Daiti, I think it's the only place in the Kutumran where Rabbi Nachman brings a story. So listen to this. Bimei HaMagid Zochren Levracha. Rabbi Nachman says, in the days of the Magid Mizrich, which when he was writing this, wasn't that, you know, much before him. Kemat, he lived at the time of the Magid in a certain way. I don't know exactly the years that they overlap, maybe the end of their lives, but certainly Rabbi Nachman was the Dar of the Tamidei HaMagid, right? The Magid was the second generation. Rabbi Nachman was the third generation. All the Tamidei HaMagid, the Rebbe of Mailuch, the Rebbe of Zusha, the Gedushas Levi, the Ma'arinayim, all those Sadiqim, the Kozlanser, the Chule, they were all the Talmud Chaver, right, of a generation of Rabbi Nachman. And so he says, "Bimei HaMagid Zochren Levracha, ya ish asher umiyuchas." There was a very wealthy, and not only wealthy, but he was miyuchas. He had very strong yichas. Came from a very prestigious family. Vayimisnagid anshei HaMagid, and he was a big misnagid to the Talmidei HaMagid. The Sipurlei Anashim is a ish, and so they sort of came to the Magid and they told him about this person. Obviously, he was causing them pain. Va'amar lahem. And he says an interesting thing. Shir l'kariv v'sayilav. Like, instead of arguing with him, try in every way that you should, in somehow, convince him, you know, to become close to me and to start to learn the teachings that we're learning. U'lishtadav z'ma'oid, and work very hard on this. This person specifically needs to be brought into the circle of the Talmidei HaMagid. U'lispal Hashem Yisbarach, and this is very important, that people sometimes forget in Kirov, that perhaps the most important weapon that we have, we talked about this, is tefillah, that's it. And so, mamish tadavin shiyazal lehem, that Hashem should help them in their endeavors and in their efforts. V'chein asim. And this is what they did. Acha Azra Mashem, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped them. Shehevi Yisai LaHamagid Zal, that finally they brought this person to the Magid. V'nase Ish Kasher Yerushimayim. And with time, he became a holy person, a Yerushimayim. But the only problem was, as his Chaleirid Menachasav. But what happened was, is that the more he started getting into Yiddishkeit a little bit, and the more he started to take more and more and more and more of his day and to devote it to tefillah and to Liman HaTorah, but the Magid, we have no idea what it was like. But the Baal Tanya says, you know, that there were miracles rolling under the benches, but nobody had time to pick them up because they were focused so much on the Limud. It was unbelievable what that Beis Medrash must have been like, right? But his Chaleir Ben Chasav, he started to lose a lot of his wealth and his property. But Amra Magid Zal, and so the Magid told him, She'elu Shnehem, E'efshar Shiyah B'makam Echad. Now this sounds very much like Torah Dalet, right? Can't have these two things at once. Can't both be a Ish Kasher Yerushimayim and at the same time be a person who's successful in wealth. But Derech Klal, again, there are always unique cases. But over here, Rabbi Nachman speaking generally speaking, that's also the rule, you know, for all blanket rules, is that there's no such thing as a blanket rule, right? Even that's a blanket rule. Okay, so there's always going to be an exception. There's always going to be, it's impossible to say because the world is so complex and so many different variants and details and complexities and nuances that we have to speak in generalities because that's how we process things. And there is truth to generality. But at the same time, when we generalize, it's always important to realize that within that generalization, it's okay if there are a couple of outliers, right? And to always leave space for that, right? Not to chas v'shalom, you know, be so simple-minded to go ahead and to present complex things that are very basic. You know, all these chevra are like this, and all this is like that. It's not true. Not all, you know. So we can speak generally because that's healthy and that's important. We can't really have any conversations about anything without some level of generalization. But there always have to be, you know, leave makom, leave space for the unique cases. Okay, so b'derech klal, e'efshe shiyah b'makom echad. It's impossible for these two things to be in one place. Hainu Torah u'gedula. Torah is the symbol over here, right? For Ish Kasher Yerushimayim, for closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, real devotion to the Torah u'gedula, and also to be able to maintain this worldly greatness, right, and this worldly success. Okay, how do we know? Because Chazal already tells us, the Gemara in Baba Basra, listen to this, what the Magid told him. The Chazal tells us, ki aroitza lahachim, a person wants to go ahead and to become wise with the chachm of Torah, yadrim, he should face southernly, right? He should face south when he davens. Lahashir, if a person wants to become wealthy, yatzbin, so then he should face the north. Why is this so? Because in the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah was to the south, and that's the Bechina of Chachma. And the Mizbeach was to the north. Or the Shulchan, rather. The Shulchan was to the north. And that's the Bechina of wealth. So therefore, Nimsa says the Magid. And the Magid told this person, Nimsa, it emerges from this Maimar Chazal, the Kishereitza Lahachim, Oymud Ladarim. That if a person wants to become wise, a person wants to devote his life to Yerushamayim, he stands facing the south. Salkeni, Yef Shaloi Lahashir. It's one or the other, right? We don't have...
Just to know, that's what, by Aramakim, He didn't change from what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Why? He had to make a choice. Is he going to light the menorah? Or is he going to do the other way?
Right.
So every day,
this was
he made
a choice
to do the menorah and forgo to be Moshe Rabbeinu's shoes.
Wow. Unbelievable. This is something they chose each and every day. Unbelievable, right? Because we're just physical human beings, and it's not possible for us to face in two directions at once. Just not. Says the Magid, that's implicit in this Gemara. Right? Make a decision. And a person has to decide this. Right? And the Ashiris is in the north. So if you're facing south in order to attain success in Torah, so then you're not standing in the north. And the opposite is also true. Fine. So all of this is Sicha Dalet. Right? And all of this is what Ibn Achman says, that it's kasha, it's difficult, it's mazik, it's not a good thing. And if a person is going to try to really, really access Yiddishkeit, Yerushalayim, and a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and at the same time he wants to face south, Yefshar. Right? And that's the first part. But the reason why I'm bringing this, and what I think is very, very helpful, is the final paragraph. Ki im hu betachlos ha'nivos. It is impossible for a person to attain both Torah, Gedula, b'makam Echad, except a person who's so, so humble, shehu ayin mamish, to the point where he's absolutely nullified. His ego is not there. Ki'ilu, the way he views himself is that he's not even in this world. All there is Ratzon Hashem. There's no ego. There's no separateness. There's no my own understanding. We're going to talk a lot about that in the time that we have left. All there is the master of the world. Says Rabbi Nachman about such a person, good, as I ain't oimed b'shum tzad. We find that a person like that, who so much removes himself from his gashmius identity, mimela, he's able to escape that need or necessity to make a blanket decision, right? Are you either facing north or are you facing south? The answer is I'm facing nowhere. I'm pasha not here. Ayin ve'efes, batel. Ki e'ef shaloymar lov shu b'tzafen, ay b'darim. Because such a person, we can't say definitively he's facing the north, he's facing the south. Me'ach shuhu ayin ve'efes mamish. Because you can't say he. There's no him. So mamele, he's standing in all places. Such a person is indeed able to attain Torah Gedula b'makam echad. And look at the two examples that he brings over here, which match the two examples in Torah Samach. Kegoyin Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi was Masada the Mishnah. So it's possible to say also this way, this Mahalach, that there is a manner in reconciling Sicha Dalet with this Lekut Maran Torah Samach by saying that in Sicha Saran Dalet, the Rebbe is talking about those that aren't on the level of Ayin, Bittel, Ephes, right? To the point that they don't exist. Therefore, Mimela, they need to choose. And if they're going to try to hold on to both things at once, it's not going to work for them. Either they're going to be very wealthy, or they're going to be big Yerei Shamayim. But if you're going to try to be very wealthy while being Yerei Shamayim, then Mimela, you end up turning more and more to the south, and you're not more to the north, and you're no longer facing the south. But a person that's Mamish, Ayin ve'Ephes, which is what Rabbi Nachman is speaking about over here, is the Bechina of... Is the bechina of not standing anywhere, or standing everywhere, right? And therefore, these tzaddikim, Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbeinu HaKadosh, were able to have Torah Gedula b'makom
echad. Moshe's, the shaman didn't want to leave his body after he died because his guf was talking about nothing.
So was not there, right? Was not there b'chlam. Yeah, and Moshe said about himself, right? Ve'ish Moshe anav mikol adam. It's possible also to say that this pasuk about the Shevi Yisachar that was wealthy is Yisachar Dafka Chamar Garim. Chamar is always is lowly. What does it say about Mashiach? Right, Mashiach is connected to Reach, we talked about. Moshe, what does it say about Mashiach? Mashiach is a ani roichev al chamar, right? Because that's the whole imagery of Mashiach coming on the hills, ani roichev al chamar, it's all anivus, it's all bittul. There's no airs, there's no grandeur, there's no flashiness, there's no lights and sirens. It's just simple anivus, it's just tmimus upshitas. That's ani roichev al chamar. Memeli Yisachar, right? We're trying to connect the two, that Yisachar is chamar garim dafka, right? That what's laden with donkey? It's not a fancy white horse. Nah, it's a chamar, right? And Mamela, this Yisachar that has chamar garim, that has his anivus that enables him to attain wealth. Mamela, it's he who's ubnei Yisachar is yodei bina. He's able to access bina.
Did Yisachar get his wealth from his zvulun or his own wealth?
Yisachar had his own wealth. I think.
Right.
I guess later on, Bnei Yisachar's Yadei Bina, I don't know if it's wealth that they attained or it's wealth that they took from Zvulun and were able to invest. Who knows? I don't know. It's a good question. Right. It's a good question. It is that way, right? Zvulun is the parnes and Yisachar. Sorry.
Because Zvulun is ships.
Right, right. You have to see the Rashi. Okay, but it emerges at the end of the day. Look at the Targum. It's Atar B'Nichsin. That's what they were blessed with. Okay. Right, it could be that I wasn't...
Rashi says it's like Svarim, Torah. Right? Hamor full of...
Svarim. Right, laden with Svarim. It's very interesting because if this is so, then it turns out that Mamish, the reason for the Rashiers was the Torah. Not only it wasn't a Stira. This itself, by the way, you're bringing up, is in a certain way, it's another aspect of this that we said, that Moshe was Nesasher from the Luchas, the Psoilus of the Luchas, right? It was the Torah itself that was the wealth. It was for them, it was the Torah and the Gedula was Mamish B'Makam Echad. It wasn't that it happened to combine within one person from two separate locations. It was Mamish one thing. It was one thing. Okay, Ad Kan Sicha Dalet, Chazei Hashem, Siyata Deshmaya, and now comes the real work now, that we need a lot of Siyata Deshmaya, as always, B'schus the Chavra, Hashem's help. Okay, so here we begin part two of tonight, and part one of the very lengthy Sicha Saran, Sicha He. For those that have Sfarim, you could see in front of you that it goes on for a good page and a half, right? And there are other pieces in Sicha Saran that are longer, but this is also, for Sicha Saran, this is a pretty long piece. Sicha Saran He. Generally speaking, it's possible to split Sicha Saran He up into about four different parts. About four different parts, even though some of the later parts are going to touch on elements that we learned in a previous part, and it all wraps together and comes together, I thought that it would be very beneficial to see each piece on its own. Every week we're going to take Be'ezer Hashem for the next coming weeks. I don't know, maybe it's possible to learn, you know, two parts also in one night, but it'll take us a few weeks to delve into Sichas Ran Hey, and let's take it piece by piece, part by part. Let's start with the first paragraph, okay? Sichas Ran Hey, Aleph. Rabbi Nachman was disgusted by Hemeganim Oid, and he would denigrate the works of the Mechakrim Va'philosophim, the works of philosophy. Va'amar, and he said, She'ein Sham Klal Seichel Gamur, K'moishiyesh Be'ezim Maimer Marsha Maram Shif, V'chiyotzim, Misfarinu Akdoshim. That in these works, with which Rabbi Nachman was intimately familiar, we're going to talk about that. Rabbi Nachman says, listen to these words, She'ein sham klal seichel gamur. Seichel gamur, there isn't. This is comparable to what Chazal already tell us, right? Chachma bagayim tamen. Torah bagayim al tamen. We're going to talk about that also, Ezer Hashem. And he brings over here an interesting thing. Like he doesn't even say Chazal. He says like Achroinim that lived in the early 1600s. Basically, the Marsha Amram Shif were not so much, you know, before Rabbi Nachman's time. He had the whole entire plethora of different areas of Torah and different generations and to choose from, and he chooses the Marsha Amram Shif. I'm going to try to give a little bit of an explanation also why these two. That our Sfarim have this Seichel Gomor, Sheish Bam Amkos, that have depth, the Seichel Niflan, wondrous Seichel, Venoim, and sweet, Ma'oid, very, very sweet. But in these works, Lenim Tzaza Seichel Klal, you don't find this kind of Seichel. You find some Seichel, that's what Rabbi Nachman says, you find Seichel, but not Seichel Gomor. Chachma Bagayim Tamin, Torah Bagayim Al Tamin. Because it is the style of these svarim to utilize, or these works, right? To utilize hekeshim, to utilize different philosophical and cognitive constructs, utilizing our perception of reality to be able to go from axiom to axiom, to start with the most basic thing that a human being could know. And Descartes, for example, everybody knows, is I think, therefore I am, right? To even clarify that we exist b'chlal, so that there's somebody to philosophize and to speculate on the nature of the universe. We have to begin with that. Ah, if I think, and therefore I am, so what does it mean to be? And then I can perceive things. And then from one to the next, axioms that build one on each other, until they come to a new revelatory understanding, right? Or this can be taken as a given, and once we have a new pedestal or a new element to start from, then from that footstool, I can begin to climb to a different place and to start to analyze realize the nature of existence and what all being emerged from and what is the nature of reality. But the seichel that we have in our Torah, you won't find that seichel. Seichel gamur, very, very important word. Seichel gamur, you don't find in those far. So, there are many, many, many places throughout Kisvei Breslov, predominantly in Sichas Ran, although there is an entire chapter in Chaim Aran, which is also a compilation of Rabbi Nachman's teachings, historical anecdotes, biographical anecdotes, that's devoted, or that are devoted, to Rabbi Nachman's war and battle against philosophy. This is a theme that runs throughout Likutei Moran, Sichas Ran, certainly. That's where it's most dealt with in many, many different lessons. About 5, 6, 7 times we're going to see this idea again and again, each time with a different facet and a new angle, which is why I don't want to sit now and learn all the pieces in Sichas Ran to talk about this, because let's focus on one at a time, and as we go through it, each time we'll analyze that facet and Be'ezer Hashem come to an understanding of what this whole thing was all about. But in Likutei Moran it shows up, in Sichas Ran, like we said, it shows up, and in Chaim Aran it shows up. And this is how Rabbi Nachman chooses to begin, or how the Masader of Rabbi Nachman's Torah, as Rabbi Nassim, chooses to begin to introduce Rabbi Nachman's war against the Sifrei HaMechakrim VaPhilosophim. His war against them. Was he the first to battle against philosophy and the inroads that philosophy had made throughout history in different areas of Am Yisrael that then spread to other segments? He was certainly not the first. Certainly not the first. And throughout time, it's possible to say, almost from the beginning of creation, there have been two streams within existence, right? What we can call the rationalist and what we can call the mystical, right? The rationalist and the mystic. And this is a theme that shows up throughout our history, in each and every generation, in some form, in some way, this debate, this mahalach. Here we're going to get into the depth of what exactly is the difference. And we're going to keep coming back to this concept of seichel gamur. Because this is not to say that there's no seichel in philosophy. We're going to see now, peace in Chaim Aran, Rabbi Nachman says, not that at all. Adarabba va'adarabba. There's a tremendous amount of seichel there. Seichel gamur there isn't. Let's take a look in Chaim Aran, Reish Chav Gimel. I actually think that it's a mistake. It should be Taf Chav Gimel. I think it's actually 423. Says the Heilige Rebbe Zchus Yagon Aleinu, Le'inyin Chakiras HaMechakrim. With regard to the Chakira of those Mechakrim, those philosophers, Shehizer Ma'oid Lehisrachek Ma'oid Mehem. The Rebbe Nachman warned a tremendous amount to stay a tremendous distance from them. B'chol mini archakas, in every kind of way, not to pick up these works, not to think about them, not to learn them. But Amar, and he said,
what's the difference between chakrim and chakra?
I don't know. I mean,
he uses two different words.
He uses two different words, but they always go together. Whenever he talks about philosophy or mechakrim, it always goes together. It's just different descriptive. For mechakr, chakira means to analyze, right? To analyze. So I don't know exactly. Probably it would be a synonym of philosopher. I don't know exactly. Mechakr means to
chakira. Chaim Aran doesn't mention the philosopher before he does.
That is interesting. You're right. You're right. Over here, it's not.
I'm wondering if it's a separate thing.
Over here, it's not. It's interesting. But Derech Klal it is, though. But Derech Klal, they are put together, but that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Okay, le'inin chakir samachakrim shehiz ma'oid le'israchik mehem ma'oid v'kol min yarchakas v'amr shamachakrim chakru b'gidulas Hashem izbara. He says that these philosophers were analyzing and were using their rationalistic understanding to attain a perception of the gedula of Hashem izbara. They weren't, like many people think, that the Hellenistic philosophers, it was complete atheism. That's not true at all. The early philosophers believed in God. What it meant, God, what that means to them, we're going to talk about. But they were able to attain some perception of a first cause, right, with a capital F and a capital C, from which everything else emerged. And they're even able to attain a perception that's true, not just like a caricature, but they're able to attain a very lofty level of understanding of what God is, and God's greatness, and where HaKadosh Baruch Hu ends, so to speak, in terms of his infinite light, and where creation begins, and how removed he is, v'chule, v'chule. Now listen to this geder. It's so sharp, and it's so intuitive, and it's so instructive. Listen to this. Ki chakru, before we get there, ki chakru shu yizbarach meraymein, umenusa ma'oid, mikol minim achshavas kasher hu be'emes. Because if there's one thing that all philosophers agree on, is that the concept of God is beyond our mind to comprehend. Where God begins, we spoke about a little bit, we spoke about when we talked about Tachas Idea Shalon Eda, they think that God begins where the physical world ends. And the truth is they don't have any access to all the spiritual levels that come first, right? In the spiritual realm, beyond nature, that are the blueprint of nature before you get to that place of Ein Sof and the Seder Eshtal Shalos. We talked about that. But Al Kopanim, they're able to attain that. And they're able to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can know nothing about Him. Kasher Uba Emes, which is the truth. And this also ties very much into Tachlis HaYidiyah Shalei Neida, which is that they don't know what it is that we can't know. So there is a level of truth to that they'll say flat out, we cannot grasp that first cause. We have no idea what it is, you know, how to even think about it. It's beyond the human mind, etc. But in order to understand the extent to which they can't understand it, that's something that only a person, again, that's attaining Hasagas through revelation, which we'll talk about, is able to then understand Tachlis idea, Tachlis idea, Shalei Neida. Okay, so even though they're able to come to this kind of understanding, listen to this. Aval einam yicholim lahavin ulahasig b'chakirasam shum mitzvah mi mitzvah satayr. They can attain an understanding that there's got to be a God. That is something that can be sensed rationally in certain, again, each philosopher brought a different aspect to this. Aristotle, right, is sort of the father, right, of modern philosophy at least. So many of the other philosophers are drawing from Aristotle, who believed in a God, right, who believed in a conception of a first cause, who was able to look at everything that was created in this world and be able to see its source in this spherical sort of structure that he imagined as the world in the core, and then different planetary powers, which in Kabbalah also, mazalos are connected to the constellations, v'chule v'chule, until he arrived at the concept of the first cause. But could he use his rational mind to come up with tefillin? Could use his rational mind to come up with tzitzis, with sukkah, with Pesach, dalet minim, bris. That's something that's beyond. And not just because it's beyond the rational mind. We're going to talk a lot about this now. Not just because it's beyond the rational mind's ability to understand what the mitzvos are, but because they're bechlal in a benimsa. They're bechlal from out of left field when we start talking about the rational person's mind to be able to understand what needs to be understood in terms of what we can sense. Had tefillah not been introduced to the world, there's not one human being that would have come up with this concept of black boxes with straps on the head and on the hand and what the function is. A mitzvah they couldn't come up with. And that's why they're big kaifrim. Even though they could be essentially spiritual people in the sense that they believe in a spiritual realm. But the mitzvos and the revelation that the mitzvos rely upon or are rooted in kaifrim gedolim. Because they only believe what they can grasp with their rational mind that began with the principles of their own perception. Until you get to the place where it's because this is true, or this we've ascertained is true, and because this is true, so then it must be that there's a first cause. But that means that your perception of godliness started with your own mind, and therefore it leaves no room for revelation, which is God thinking of you instead of you thinking about God all day, and God reaching out in order to introduce something into creation that you wouldn't have been able to grasp with your own mind. That's the mitzvahs. But afterwards, save it, okay? Therefore, even though again, Rabbi Nachman says yesham seichel, there is seichel kasher be'emes, but ein sham seichel gamur. Okay, so let's talk about this outside for a minute. Yesham seichel, ein sham seichel gamur. Our understanding of Kodesh Baruch Hu, in terms of our rational perception, can bring us, like Rabbi Nachman says, to a certain perception of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and what He isn't and what He must be, because Hashem gifted us with the rational ability to come to that perception and awareness and understanding. But if our system of understanding precludes revelation, precludes the tradition that we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu descended onto our Sinai, which could be the same Hashem that Aristotle believes in, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu descended into this world and gifted us with a book, with a world of thought, that contains and captures the objective reality as seen from God's perspective. So then we have one half of the coin and not the other half of the coin. And it's going to essentially be limited, because what we're talking about, Aristotle could never have come up with the mitzvah of tefillin or tzitzis, because it's necessarily limited to what the mind's able to grasp. And that means that anything religiously speaking, that is a fundamental foundation of our Yiddishkeit, if we preclude revelation, is going to be necessarily crippled and stunted. Aristotle's God, that we made mention of before, as the first cause, right? Without getting into it, because we're trying to stay away from this. But just to be able to talk about what we're not what we shouldn't be talking about, it was very, very difficult, right? Is, in his words, I guess Latin or French, whatever he was speaking in, the unmoved mover. This is a concept in philosophy, the unmoved mover. What does this mean? Part of the way that Aristotle arrives at this conception of a first cause of a being is to note the way in which everything that moves in existence is because it's being inspired by a higher premise, by a higher principle. People move because there was something above, either an ideal or an idol, right? A person that we look up to, that we want to imitate, but there's always something above that's motivating people to move. Memela, Aristotle goes from step to step to step to step, from the lowest creations and creatures or levels of creation, higher and higher, that each and every mover is being influenced in turn by another mover, until you come to the very first mover that is neither that is not impacted, unlike all the other movers along the way that were impacted by a higher mover, but that impacts everything. And that's called the unmoved mover, the place where it started. Because it can't go on infinitely, right? There's got to be a place from which the chain began. And that's called the unmoved mover. That's the bechina of Aristotle. And we're talking about Aristotle's concept of this first cause that is completely and entirely removed from the process of being impacted. And all it is that it impacts. It's the unmoved, impossible to be impacted being. This is the God of Aristotle. This is the God of Aristotle. With that in mind, let's take a look at Chaim Aran. It should also be tough. Ches 408. And Rabbi Nachman says like this, and even before we start with this, we have to say again that even in Rabbi Nachman, and certainly in the other tzaddikim that spoke about the Rambam's influence, under the influence, right, and his studies of Aristotelian works that showed up sometimes in Yad, in the first Chelek, in Mada, but certainly in Mar Nevuchim, that all of those that disagreed with the Rambam's approach, or certain things that the Rambam said, which itself is a huge sugya, all of the different charges and all the different criticisms that they had, it's multifaceted, right, throughout the generations, but still, the kavod of the Rambam in terms of what he contributed, where would we be? Mimoisha va'ad Moisha, lo'ikam kamoisha. And so even Rabbi Nachman himself, in this piece that he's going to talk about Mar Nevuchim, and again, he's not the first to have done so, and he's not the last. The Gra famously also, I think in Yeridea, on Shulchan Aruch, the Gra also, very, very sharp language. Right? And there was a big, big, big tumult in the times of the Rambam, largely the end of his life, and the next generation, throughout those centuries, was a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous machlokes against the Rambam. Right? And again, not detracting chas v'shalom one iota, right, from his godless in Limud HaTorah that's completely unfathomable, right? That it's even a joke for me to say unfathomable. I don't know what I'm not able to fathom, right? So that needs to be said as a given. But just to understand what it is that the Rambam is rooted in, and what's the different path of Rabbi Nachman and the Ramban and Kabbalah is trying to take us on a different journey. Rabbi Nachman would like, you know, make jokes about, but he wasn't impressed by the reasons given for the mitzvahs in Sefer Mar Nevuchim that the Rambam Chelek Gimel Perek Lamed Hey lists. The Klalius first, different reasons for the general categories of mitzvahs, and then he starts going into specifics, each and every one, each and every chag, v'chule, v'chule. Va'amar, and he said, Eich yal al adas loymar tamei hevel ke'elu. How could we give such simplistic reasons to say this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us these mitzvahs? Al karbonus u'ketayres. To say on karbonus and ketayres, that basically the implication of what the Rambam says is that on a very basic, simple level, is that there were pagan worship, worship services where they brought up animals to their gods, right? With a cat, with a lowercase g, right? And therefore, in order to lead us away from that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our own karbanos and ketores, and that's basically the implication of just to keep us away from the hevel of serving a sacrifice to an idol. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us karbanos. That's karbanos. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this karbanos and ketores. Well, ketores is the yud aleph minim. Why 11, not 12? Why 11 and not 10? How much rectifications are taking place in the spiritual worlds just by saying the Ketores? Forget about being makter Ketores on the Beis HaMikdash. If it were indeed the way that these ultimately tzaddikim were describing, but that Rabbi Nachman felt was twisted and was wrong, if that's what the Ketores was for, so then what would it help to say the Karbanos? By the way, I'm not even sure that the Rambam would hold that there's something significant about saying karbanos, which itself is interesting. I don't know where that's rooted from. I don't know if that's in Chazal, the Amira of Ketores, where that comes from, a karbanos. I don't know. Could be that was later. I don't know. I'm a strong lashonis. How could someone say such a folly? That the Ketores is rooted spiritually in that lofty place. What's happening in all the spiritual realms when a person is doing the Ketores, and the tremendous soidos, the tremendous secrets, which the Rambam didn't have. The kisve arizal. But the truth is that we have no conception of what the reason for the Ketores is. We just believe what Moshe Rabbeinu told us, that we should do Ketores. Not because there's any understanding or explanation that's going to belittle the grandeur and the reach of this mitzvah, but simply b'tmimus u'b'pshitus. U'b'vadei ish v'zeh ta'amim noiro'im. She'i'ef shalahasi v'shum seichel en noishi klal. That there are reasons that are impossible to give a pragmatic explanation for the Ketores. It sounds sweet on paper. But this is what the Ketores is. What that avoida was. Even just to say them, all the tamei hamitzvahs are incredibly lofty and are hidden from any living person. Wondrous. And so the Rambam is caught in a very funny place. Because the Rambam, in a certain way, his conception of God is connected to the Aristotelian concept of the unmoved mover, the first cause. That the Rambam is marich to talk about how we can't talk about any of Hashem's positive qualities, only the negative qualities. What we know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only what we know for sure He isn't. He isn't two. He isn't limited. V'chule. All these things, we can't talk about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself and about His attributes and about how He relates to this world. He's the unmoved mover, standing outside, above, beyond. It's called negative theology. We can only say anything about Hashem what we know that He is not, but not about what we know He is, which is the Bechina of His spashtas, asiya, right? A relationship that's tangible, that's feelable, that we can perceive. But by the same token, the Rambam believes in revelation. The Rambam's name was Maimon, right? The Rambam believes in revelation. So the Rambam's playing this funny game where, on the one hand, unlike Aristotle, that Rabbi Nachman says wouldn't be able to come up with the seichel, the hanoshi that he has to be able to perceive a mitzvah he doesn't have. But the Rambam has mitzvahs. But the Rambam's premise for the ta'amei ha-mitzvahs that he gives is that they're all for our egotistical benefit, or our ego-focused benefit, in the sense that the mitzvahs were given only to be able to bring us to a rectification, to live in a proper way, but not in any way that God it has a stake in our mitzvah, so that we can give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was an idea that was completely and entirely out of the Rambam system of thought, because again, Hashem is the unmoved mover. There's no having a hashpa on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or a reciprocal relationship. God is mashpia. The mitzvahs that He gave us have reasons. You know what the reasons are? Only for our own tikkun. But not that there's any sort of flow up and down, back and forth. Yisirusa de la sata, yisirusa de la eila, mayinukvin, mayindukhrin, all these concepts. And the Rambam doesn't exist b'chlam. Says Rabbi Nachman, how ridiculous. If you weren't able to come up with the mitzvah with your own rational understanding, so then why are you so sure that after the mitzvah has been given, which is rooted in revelation, you're able to use your own rational mind to be able to understand why that revelation was gifted? Again, the mitzvahs don't come from the place of my own das, my own mind. Aristotle wouldn't have had access to that because it's mushlal revelation. Says Rabbi Nachman to the Rambam, I don't understand. If the mitzvahs are rooted in revelation, so then don't you think that there would be reasons for the mitzvahs that are also beyond our conception ability to grasp? Again, what's the rationalist understanding of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, who's the unmoved mover, is that we cannot have any hashpa on Him. Why? Because it doesn't make sense. Hashem is perfect. If we could have hashpa on a Kadosh Baruch Hu to give Him something, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't be perfect. And therefore the rational understanding of God negates, right, or precludes our ascribing to Him any acceptance from us, the unmoved mover. But Rambam, the whole thing of the mitzvahs is itself revelation. So then why can't we go and look at the mitzvahs and then be able to perceive that there's an aspect of why they matter to us that's also beyond understanding, and in that beyond understanding we could indeed give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we could indeed impact Him. See? That was Rabbi Nachman's challenge. These two things don't go together. There's so much to say. Okay, so Be'ezer Hashem, we're going to pick up next time. But just be Kitzur Nimrats, the Ramban, who did have Kabbalah, and the shorish of the Kabbalistic idea is that Am Yisrael has an impact on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lasas Nachas Ruach, and that we're creating tikkun and we're rectifying things, fixing the world. We're making an impact because that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it, that He should give, but He should also receive. And that's where Kabbalah gives us a whole different understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a reciprocal relationship, as opposed to being commanded, but we're in love, right? And in love, the two are able to give to one another. So we're just opening the sugya of Siyata Deshmaya, but I think that it's a good start. It's a big, complex sugya. All of a sudden, Yad Rashmaya. Shukran.